All right, everyone, welcome to this week's edition of The Podcast. I am your host, Jake Welch, co-host, Zach Bloxham, here to talk about what last week we referred to as millennial football, which come to find out happened this last weekend on Saturday at Darrell K. Royal Stadium in Texas. Zach, you were there to witness. I was there to witness. Are you still basking in the glow?
It's warm.
It feels nice and bright. You're cold. You're holding it. You're fanning the flames of beautiful football.
Yes, it's almost as if the blistering Austin heat was just a foreshadowing of the football radiance that we were going to see. Just amazing.
Absolutely stunning. I'm still sweating, personally. It was so gosh dang hot, particularly where we were sitting. There's just so many people crowded right there around us. And you know what? I don't think anyone cared because it was such a fantastic football game with such a fantastic result. And let's just get right down into the nitty-gritty of it. Specifically, I think in looking back at the entire game, and you can talk to this a little bit more because you were able to go back and rewatch the entire game. The first half was so frustrating because clearly we were outplaying Texas by far and wide. We were having good, long, sustained drives. Our defense was coming up with turnovers, playing fantastic, doing the typical bend a little bit but not quite break. But the offense just couldn't turn it on. Then in the third quarter, we had the 28-point barrage, just outburst, and the defense continued to play great. What was the big difference that you saw in that third quarter compared to the first half?
I don't think much of Bronco mentioned in his postgame that they made a few changes in terms of, I think, how they were blocking up front. He didn't speak to those specifically, but you could see that the holes in the second half were much, in the third quarter specifically, were bigger than in the first half. But to me, the biggest difference was BYU came out of halftime with just a swagger. It wasn't at all, we missed our opportunities, where we had our chance and we lost it. It was kind of like, we're here to kind of reclaim what we may have left on the field in the first half. This wasn't Dan Smith's BYU. Now, this was the new BYU. This was a BYU that was going to take advantages of all the opportunities that they had. And I think that in the third quarter, that first drive was just a march down the field.
And it took all of, like, what, 3 minutes off the clock?
And it was a wake-up call, I think, to Texas that you'd been playing on borrowed time in the first half, that we're getting down to business now.
Absolutely. I remember looking, you know, kind of like looking up the scoreboard, seeing how much time that had happened. And I don't know how many times we even had to convert on third down in that drive. I remember on first and second down, we were attacking, getting 10, 15, 7 yard chunks at a time. That there were no, like, third and long or third, even very many third and short situations that we had to convert on.
Yeah. The 200 yards in the first half was equaled by, I think, 181 plus yards in the third quarter itself. So it was just a magnificent performance, one of the best quarters of football that I've ever seen BYU play. And it was just a joy to be able to see that in person and to be able to see kind of all of your dreams come true in front of you.
Absolutely. And it wasn't so much of, like, Taysom Hill putting the team on his back, because there are definitely times where he has some, you know, obviously what we will all affectionately call the leap or the hurdle or, you know, whatever we're going to affectionately call it. There was that amazing, you know, play. But there were so many other plays, specifically in the third quarter. It was Jamal Williams, you know, busting off a really tough 15, 20-yard run. It was Algie Brown catching a pass out of the back, like a really tough pass out of the backfield and rumbling downfield. Jordan Leslie making that acrobatic catch as he came to the ground. It was really a team effort that I saw, and it wasn't just like, okay, Taysom Hill's going to do his thing.
For sure, and I think that's kind of what people have been saying about BYU, is they can go and go as far as Taysom Hill can take them. And that's true. Taysom Hill, I think, is BYU's best player. But from all the offensive players you mentioned, there were defensive players too. Alani Fua had a couple of really good plays. And in the middle, Graham Rowley, Marcus Johnson, and Travis Tuilaloa in that third quarter were plugging up the middle and really making it difficult for Texas to be able to run the ball up the middle. And with that happening, that made Tyrone Swoops have to make plays with his arm. And when BYU got the lead, they could become more aggressive in their blitz packages, and that was just good night for the Texas offense and Texas chances to move the ball. They went three and out pretty quick on both those on those two early series in the third quarter.
Yeah, and something that I wanted to ask you about is comparing, I guess, specifically within that third quarter when we were most dominant, was what were you more impressed with, like the BYU offense and the way that we were able to march down and get those drives and scores, or the way that the defense was just so stout and not giving anything to Tyrone Swoops and the Texas offense?
I think the answer is yes. You know, I think it's yes to both. And I actually threw in the special teams as well, because when it looked like Texas was on the ropes, in comes Mike Alisa, the man who plays, who's now played all three areas of the field, offense, defense, and special teams, and to make a great strip of the ball on a kickoff return to basically put Texas out of its misery in the third quarter. So it was all three phases firing on full cylinders there in that third quarter. It was beautiful to see.
No, it was absolutely amazing, and I know that I had this here in our rundown here, but I'll mention it now. I think this was in the fourth quarter when this happened, but I have never seen a more perfectly executed punt from Scott Arlano than that one of those last punts where he, first of all, it was an amazing high spiral that he sent, you know, down the field, and then it so perfectly bounced on the five and then right out at the half-yard line. And it was the best punt I've ever witnessed in person.
That was like a moment on, you know, NCAA football or Madden where you just hate quit. You just throw down the controller, turn off the Xbox, and cheat codes. This one's over.
I think that's when the student section, they're like, you know what? If this is going to happen, I'm not going to want to witness the rest of this. And the student section started to leave.
Yeah, I think they did. I think they all cheat quitted.
right after that punt. How sad is that? It's like that was the straw that broke the camel's back.
The punt, and it looked like a, it was just beautifully. I mean, you seriously could not diagram it better using a pen and a paper.
No, it was that last half we really saw, like you said, every aspect of BYU's team just really coming together and playing at their full potential. And I think that's the biggest frustration last year. And even a frustration in the UConn game was, when are we going to see the full potential of this BYU team? And I think we saw a lot of it in that game.
Yeah, I think we talked about this last week, was that BYU played, I think, its best and most complete game against Boise State last season, and we never really saw it again. So the question will be whether BYU can actually continue to have complete performances. But on the other hand, we don't want to raise expectations enough where BYU has to play as brilliantly as they did in the third quarter throughout the whole game. We know that games aren't going to be won or lost by how BYU plays perfectly. They just have to be able to put together a complete game, and a complete game isn't going to be a perfect game. It just has to be a competent game.
And it's interesting, like, how people compare a complete game to like past games and even to past seasons. And the biggest frustration, we might be going down a wormhole here with this, but I hear fans talk about the Gary Croton 2001 season, and they talk about, oh man, we never really dominate teams like we did back then. And I think to myself, yeah, we put up 70 points against Tulane, but we also gave up 49. I'm completely fine beating a Connecticut team 35-10 if it means we have a more stout defense and we're playing a more complete game. Like, sure, we had an offense that was just like absolutely crazy and could just light up the scoreboard, but we have a more complete team. We have a more complete offense and defense now. And I think it's silly for people to compare what happened in that season to what we're doing now.
I totally agree. I mean, I believe in that season, BYU needed a fourth down conversion against New Mexico to even win. So, and that people have, you know, rose-colored glasses. Well, they see only what the final result is. They only see the result and not the process. And the process was that BYU, throughout the whole year with that Croton's first year, were a flawed team defensively. And it only caught up to them, you know, on the islands in Hawaii and in the bowl game against Louisville. And with BYU this year, I'm not sure I see a glaring weakness on the team. I think that the offensive line, I've looked at the game film again, and They had a little struggles in the first half, but man, in that second half, they really imposed their will on Texas. Defensively, the defensive line is we get what we get, Broncos 3-4 scheme. And we haven't really seen much of the kickoff team because BYU hasn't given up that many points. And on the kick coverage team, I think they were much better against Texas than they were against UConn. So I think, you know, we're only two games in, but I'm not seeing really any glaring weaknesses to this BYU team. I think they're all around pretty good.
I think that we'll touch on that a little bit later, kind of talking about, you know, what we foresee for this season and, you know, what we hope in seeing the, you know, potential undefeated season. But really interesting point that there's not a whole lot of weaknesses, at least glaring weaknesses, on this BYU team. Kind of talking about, specifically back to the Texas game, talking about the return of Jamal Williams and Robertson Daniel, both guys who were out the first game of the season, came back with, I thought, fantastic performances. Jamal didn't really, you know, get the touchdowns. You know, Adam Hine had both of the scores there, but had a very workmanlike, I think, of 21 carries for 89 yards, and just did a really good job of establishing the running game and opening things up for Taysom.
Man, Jamal runs hard, doesn't he?
Oh my God! I retweeted a animated GIF that I think Jake Edmonds, former BYU reporter, had sent out, and he got 15 yards after the initial contact. I think someone tried to throw an arm tackle on him, and he just fought through it, kept his legs motoring through. I don't think that guy ever falls backwards.
No, he doesn't. He runs so hard. And he's got that sweet Big Timers Cash Money Millionaires mouth guard now, that grill.
That's amazing.
That is amazing. So, and he's a 19-year-old junior, which just blows my mind. But like, I totally agree. I mean, he just runs hard, and he doesn't even care when Robert and I decides to throw that, you know, I'm going to throw Jamal into the front, into the middle of the line three times on successive first downs just to get my blood pumping, and he just hops back up and goes on to second down. Just love having that guy back.
Yeah, it's fantastic, and I love his attitude. And Robertson Daniel, not as much, you know, swag as Jamal would, you know, would have. Jamal's, you know, he's very much a fun personality. Robertson Daniel is a very much, you know, speak softly but carry a big stick kind of guy, where I think one of the blogs somewhere, some national blog, was giving him, you know, respect for, of, I think he, you know, he recovered two fumbles, forced a fumble, six tackles, quietly had a very impressive game.
Love Rob Daniel, and I agree with you. It seems like, you know, Jamal's still a kid, and he just, you know, he tweets like a kid. I don't follow any players, but I see some of the things they say, whereas Rob Daniel seems to me very calm, collected, mature, and very much just kind of about that business boss, you know? He's just here to do work, and it's great to see someone who has just kind of taken the mantle of, you know, this is my defensive backfield, and I'm the leader of this defensive backfield, and this is going to be our year. I remember him saying something about that last season. He had a kind of struggled against Washington last year in the bowl game and said, I'm going to be better next year. Man, you can see throughout the offseason by the performances in the first two games, in the game against Texas, I should say, that he's really put his money where his mouth is, and the BYU secondary is in as good a position, I think, as it's ever been.
Absolutely. One last thing on the Texas game, and this is kind of speaking more to the Charlie Strong side of things and his comments that he made after the game. I think he set a record for the number of times you can say embarrassed or embarrassment in a press conference. I think it was 42 or something like that. Is he speaking too much of the embarrassment of Texas? And is he not giving it enough credit to the dominance of BYU?
I think that he knows the kind of the mantle that they placed on this game. First, the mantle that he has at Texas being who it is. It's the Texas football program. And losing to BYU in consecutive years in the way they did, especially when they had circled this game, I think what he's speaking to is more the embarrassment of having this game, looking forward to this game, and then falling really flat and not really having any improvement whatsoever in their ability to stop BYU and what they wanted to do. I think that's what he's speaking to. And I never really took it as a slight to BYU, mostly because I read his opening comments during the postgame press conference. His first statement was, "I told the guys during the," and I'm gonna, you know, not speaking verbatim, but he says, "I told the guys during warmups that they weren't ready to play, that if they continue with this attitude, that we're going against a really great football team, and they're going to get embarrassed if they keep this up, and that's exactly what happened." So that was his opening statement, and I think that's more to what he felt. I think he was embarrassed by the way his players, either from their maybe their callous attitude, seemed like in pregame, didn't learn anything from Provo, from the Provo beatdown, and so they experienced it again. And I think that's what he was frustrated with, more so embarrassed by his team and not so much as a slight against BYU.
As we're starting to see some of the national blogs and websites, I saw ESPN had a big push for a couple articles talking about BYU possibly going undefeated. And Grantland today had a nice little article about Taysom Hill. Do you think that the national media is starting to recognize that, no, this just wasn't like a terrible Texas team, but this is a good BYU team?
I think so. And I think that the narrative obviously was the major player and the story is still Texas, no matter if BYU wins, 41-7 in Austin, Texas is still going to be the story. And then I think once people started realizing when they got their Texas jokes and sarcasms and, burning the Longhorn orange out of the way, I think they looked at BYU and looked at the game film and saw that this is a good football team and that looking forward at the schedule, if they can go into Austin and do this, that there really isn't anyone on their schedule that they're going, that they're not going to be favored to beat. And so I think it's just kind of a part of the program where college football writers and national media outlets, they have to fill space and they have to fill time. And so BYU is someone they're going to talk about. And we'll have to see if BYU is worthy of that, as if they can continue the success that they've had in the first part of the season.
Absolutely. Just two games in, still got a lot to go, and we'll talk about that later. For now, let's talk Houston. This was the game last year, I believe Houston came in to the BYU game. I want to say that they were undefeated at that time. And, a lot of people were talking about how, they had a good passing attack, they had a good team. Their defense was forcing crazy amounts of turnovers. I think they are averaging like three or four, three turnovers a game or something like that. And a lot of BYU fans thought that we were going to go in and dominate. We did for the first little bit. I think that, we went up quickly. But then Houston, with a lot of big plays and even some luck, I remember there was a specific play where a wide receiver, gave a generous push off of Rob Daniel in order to get an 80-yard touchdown completion. But they kept with us the entire game, and there were many points where I thought that we were going to lose that game. Is there any issue there this time around, or are we fully prepared for what Houston's going to bring to the table?
I agree with what you said, that game was just bizarre. It seemed like Houston played the best game they possibly could. I mean, O'Korn was playing out of his damn mind. They were catching everything, making extra plays. They were tipping balls. They couldn't stop BYU, but their offense was firing on all cylinders. And so I think that was probably the perfect storm to be able to beat BYU, and I can't see them having the same kind of offensive output in Provo on Thursday. I just can't see that happening.
No, and I think that we'll be better prepared, and I think that we have a much better secondary. Not that our secondary last year was, anything to scoff at. I mean, we had a great secondary last year. But looking at the guys that we have now and the fact that we have Dallin Leavitt, who I thought had a sneaky good game against Texas. He had a fantastic tackle in the backfield. I love the way that he just flies around with reckless abandon. I think he loves hitting people. And then also Harvey Jackson as well. And kind of the depth that we have at that nickel corner safety position, I think that with the, spread offense that Houston's going to bring in there, I think that we're a little bit more prepared with at least the personnel that we're going to have there.
Absolutely, and I think that for all the people you mentioned, Leavitt and Jackson and Prater, I think that adds BYU to be able to just sit back in the nickel or the dime and just say, if you can complete 10 straight passes against us and march down the field, then go ahead, but we don't think you can do it. So Matt would be my guess is the game plan is going to be a lot of blitzes on the outside and dropping guys back in nickel and dime and saying, we don't think you can do it.
Yep. And, I mean, you kind of see that with all of the teams that BYU is going to face. And it's funny to see all the Texas bloggers talk about, you know, Tyrone Swoops, and he was able to, like, yeah, he was a perfect 8-for-8 on his, you know, first, you know, few drives. And it's like, well, yeah, I mean, BYU is going to give you those dink and dunk passes. You know, if you're okay getting 5-6 yards at a time through the air, yeah, we'll give that to you, but we're not going to concede anything more. I mean, they had a few longer passes, but I think they only had like one completion of more than 25 yards or more. And so I think it's kind of tough for offensive coordinators to get in the mindset of like, okay, BYU will give me these kinds of routes, and then sticking to that all game and having the patience to do that all game. It's tough.
I totally agree. It's BYU's just saying, you know, if you want to do this, go ahead. We don't think you can. And I think that it's one of those things that Robert and I struggled with back in the day, his first time here, when he had such a good running attack, is that sometimes he just get bored running it. You know, he just get 5 yards a carry, run, you know, 5 or 6 times, and then be like, I don't want to run it again. I want to throw it. And then he'd throw it, and then they'd have to punt. I remember that happened again in that Utah game. I think it was 2008 when Utah went to the Sugar Bowl again.
Oh, here's the Max Hall interception
yeah.
Fiesta.
Harvey Unga and the BYU offense, they were getting like 6-7 yards a carry. And for some reason, in the third quarter, he decided to throw it every down. I mean, it's just one of those things where you just kind of like, this is kind of boring. And I think BYU's defensive scheme is supposed to lull you into that, just kind of like, you know, you really want to do this all game? We can do this all game. And so I just don't see Houston being able to break that mold on Thursday.
No, I think that they're gonna come in, try to do the same thing as a lot of these other teams, run the ball and then try and air it out over top, which I was surprised Texas didn't try to do as much, but we'll see what happens. I think that our defensive line and our front seven's a little bit better than some people assume, even though we don't have Ziggy Ansah or Kyle Van Noy. But speaking about the offensive performance that we're kind of expecting to see against Houston, do you want to see Robert and I kind of dial it up and say, okay, well, let's get Taysom Hill some serious reps and some serious numbers so we can start talking about him in the Heisman conversation?
I don't. I just really care about winning. I think that Robert and I is probably that same way.
Well, you don't want another Heisman Trophy winner, Zach? Is that what you're saying?
No, I think the chances of, I mean, I think Taysom, this is maybe just me being just a horrible pessimist, but Taysom Hill could throw for 4,000 yards, rush for 2,000 yards, and he would still finish third in the Heisman Trophy. I just don't think that, there's no way I can't see a guy outside the big power conferences winning the Heisman Trophy simply because there's the strength of schedule argument that they'll always make that, oh yeah, those numbers are inflated. And we know when guys like Jordan Lynch kind of hurt the candidacy of Taysom Hill because people see Jordan Lynch running up all these huge numbers outside of the Power Five conferences, and then he gets in and plays in a major bowl game against a great team like Florida State, and he can't do anything. And so by, you know, that kind of performance is imputed on guys like Taysom Hill, I think, in terms of major awards like that. There's just no way that someone like Taysom Hill is going to be able to win the Heisman Trophy. That's just my opinion. It might be pessimistic, but I just don't think there's any chance.
It's pessimistic, but I also think it's very realistic at the same point. I mean, we saw what Jordan Lynch did last year and the kind of numbers that he was able to put forth and the kind of production that he was able to have. And I would agree with you that I think that, you know, he could put up gaudy numbers and just go absolutely nuts, but some guys from the SEC will, you know, that the Hill quarterback from Texas A&M, he's going to, you know, put up crazy numbers as well. And they're going to say, oh, well, he did it in the SEC. So it'll be tough. But I think that you'll see some BYU fans that are going to start calling for it where, you know, in the third quarter, we might be up 21, 28, 35 points. And they'll say, hey, Taysom Hill hasn't got to 150 yards yet.
we should keep him in. Let's keep running that draw. Or he hasn't got. Let's get his passing numbers up a little bit more, coach. Oh, come on, Coach Nye. Let's get him. You know, let's get him some more stats. But I think I'm with you in that. Let's get the W first and foremost.
Yeah, I just don't like to treat the game as a video game. You know, I just think that it. I would much rather. I think it's better for BYU to, if the game's out of hand or, you know, it's 35-3 in the third quarter, to get Christian Stewart in there and let him get some reps and let him run the offense in the same way that Taysom is. Don't just run it up the middle. I think that's a waste of reps for the backup. I think the backup should get in there and have the same game plan as if the game is 0-0, because I don't think you can run up the score with your backup quarterback in there. And so I think that would be better for the whole of BYU as a team, is if Christian Stewart gets more reps, if then, you know, keeping Taysom in there to get to pad his stats.
And now that we've officially talked about Christian Stewart and backups getting more time, I think we've officially jinxed this game. We are now going to lose against Houston. I think it's just one of those bad karma things that seems to happen, right?
Well, I was actually thinking about the last time BYU beat a major Big 12 power, when they beat Oklahoma. And they came home, and they had Florida State. Now, I'm not saying Florida State's Houston, okay? So just let me finish here. Florida State, the week that they, before they came to Provo, had to have a fourth quarter comeback to beat Jacksonville State in Tallahassee. They came into Provo, and they had already lost to Miami in the opening weekend. So they came in, Miami lost. They lost to Miami in the first week, almost lost to Jack State in the second week, and they come into Provo. And then they stole a bunch of sod, and all I can hear is a tomahawk chop in my head. The other side, Houston loses to UTSA in the very first game of the season, and they come rolling into town kind of humbled and hopefully not hungry, but just humbled. I don't think they're the same. Obviously, Florida State has more talent.
But the parallels are there, though. A big win against a Big 12 team in Texas, coming home for the home opener, lots of high hopes. BYU is ranked both times.
Yep. So I just don't want to rewrite this. It would seem like a Cormac McCarthy novel. I just don't want to hear. I don't want to see that on Thursday.
I think that we need to officially name this podcast the Pessimist Podcast. The Pessimist Podcast, where we, Jake and Zach, talk about what can go wrong will probably go wrong.
Yeah, I agree.
I think we found our official name. Let's do it. Speaking a little bit beyond the Houston game, and we've already talked a little bit about this in regards to the season outlook, you hear a lot of people on Twitter, a lot of people, social media, everywhere, talking about an undefeated season now that we've beaten Texas and kind of looking at the schedule moving forward. In my perspective, I'm all about let's take care of what we have in front of us, and then we can worry about, you know, what we have the rest of the season. That's the high school football coach in me saying, this, you know, it's a 1 week season. We take care of that week at a time. But is this discussion about an undefeated season, is it warranted? Should we be talking about it?
I have cognitive dissonance on this issue. I seriously have these two competing ideas in my mind. They are totally, they cannot be taken together. Well, on one side, I think it's absolutely right that this is a game. We're fans. You should be able to talk about, look forward to the season. You've invested all this time and this effort and this energy into being a fan of the team. And so what? You won't look forward and look at the schedule and see that BYU is going to be favored in every single one of their games, and that the Big Ten's already shot itself in the foot. Probably not going to make the playoff, and they just need a couple other things to fall, and maybe, just maybe, they might be able to make, you know, that Final Four playoff, or, you know, in the alternative, they'll be able to make a New Year's Day Bowl, and it'll be the best season in BYU football since 1996. Just everything that we thought and wanted the Quest shirt to represent, that could happen, you know. On that side, the other side of me, the more analytical side of me, says, and I think I tweeted something about this, reminds me of a quote from Jim Lovell from Apollo 13, when they're going through this, how they're going to get back into Earth, and they're going through all these processes, and the two astronauts get really mad at each other because the systems just aren't working and the checklist isn't working. And Jim Lovell says to him, he says, there are about 1,000 things that have to happen in order for us to get home, and we are on number 8, and you guys are talking about number 692. So let's worry about what we're doing here right now. And so that's what the other side of it is. It's that we're talking about being 12-0 when BYU's 2-0. And there's a whole season ahead. There's injuries that could happen. There's teams that could get hot, teams like Cal or Nevada, who maybe we aren't even looking at, that maybe they have a really good season. One of those games is a road game, and one of those games is a team that we have had trouble with historically in the past. I just think it's putting the cart before the horse. So I can totally understand both sides of that argument, and I actually have both sides of that argument. I'm just along for the ride, and if you want to talk about it, fine. Don't want to talk about it, I totally understand. I just think that it's just kind of part of being a fan and take it to each their own.
Yeah, I think it's just natural for any fan and any person to want to look ahead and want to think about, what if, all these possibilities, this could happen and this could happen. But so many of the things, like you said, they're not thinking about what if the other way around. Like, what if Taysom Hill gets hurt? Or what if, we go into Cal and they're, they've somehow just stunned the Pac-12 and they're, like 9-3 or something like that. So there's lots of things to consider, but I am more of the, okay, let's consider this Houston game because that is the one that we are playing in 2 days. Yeah. That's the one we need to be thinking about.
So. That's what I think. If I had to be push come to shove, that's where I am at too. All that talk is kind of interesting. It's interesting to think about, but I really just want to beat Houston.
Yeah. And so we kind of talked previously about, this team. I mean, obviously the potential of the undefeated season. The reason why we're saying that, is because we've seen the potential of this team and what they're able to do in a game like they did against Texas. And we said that there's no glaring holes. We talked a little bit, you said, the offensive line and special teams. Any other areas you're saying, okay, if we were to have a perfect record or an undefeated season, what really needs to happen? And what are some of the holes we need to fill?
I think the offensive lines looked better, even though they gave up, I think, 4 first-half sacks. Some of those to Texas, I think some of those were that Taysom was holding on to the ball a little too long. I think that was probably my biggest concern with Taysom in that Texas game. But the offensive line moving forward, it just has to become better. I think there are signs that it is, it faced a pretty good pass rush against Texas, probably not going to face a more talented pass rush throughout the rest of the season. And they held up relatively well, especially in the second half, and especially run blocking in the second half. So I think that there's a good foundation there, but be able to protect Taysom, keep him healthy, and to be able to open up holes in that running game, it really is going to rely on the offensive line. I think the defensive line, with Broncos' scheme, I don't really have any really concerns about that end of it, but I just want to see the offensive line continue to grow and develop, because there are 2 true freshmen on that starting offensive line and a bunch of guys who play. I think I counted when I was rewatching the game, I think I counted 9 or 10 offensive linemen who had played multiple snaps. So getting some depth, and I think that's a good thing. I just want to see them continue to progress. I think that it's just night and day different from that was last year. And kudos to Robert and I and Garrett 2J for upgrading that unit.
Absolutely. The only thing, and I don't know if this has been brought up universally throughout the BYU fan bases, I would like to see the BYU receivers work a little bit more to get to work on their route running, whatever it is, to work on their separation. And I know that this is something that's always been frustrating. I think Jordan Leslie does a great job of this. And you started to see in that game against Texas that that's the direction that Taysom Hill is going to start going. He's going to become that the Cody Hoffman-type player where, okay, third down and distance, or it's, I need to be, it's a crucial converting point. I'm going to go to Jordan Leslie. But I would like to see, guys like Mitch Matthews and any other wide receiver that we have coming in there. Those times you were talking about Taysom holding on the ball too long, I also think some of those are coverage sacks that are getting. And we saw this against, Wisconsin and Notre Dame of last year. When you get someone who comes up and is physical and jams our wide receivers at the line of scrimmage, they can slow us down significantly. So I don't know if it's a matter of Taysom Hill getting on the same page as the receivers, just getting a few more games under their belt to work on timing and whatnot, or if it's the receivers getting a little bit better separation, running some better routes. I would just like to see them step up a little bit more.
Absolutely. I think you're exactly right on that. I think that that's something BYU struggled mightily last year. BYU's receiving corps was not good last year. Kobe Hoffman, in those games that he was up against one-on-one coverage against really good defenses, couldn't find himself open. And that made it really difficult, now impossible, for Taysom to be able to have a good completion percentage and win football games. But like you said, Jordan Leslie has, I think, been a very good addition. And hopefully guys like Mitch Matthews can get on board a little bit. And I've been impressed with Taron Houck this season. I think he's been kind of a breath of fresh air. What's the surprise? And then, you know, we need to get Davon Blackman and Nick Kurtz on the field, either healthy or off suspension, and get some snaps, because I think that adds another dimension to the wide receiver core.
Yep. And I think that I was kind of thinking about this as Davon Blackman wasn't really seeing the field a whole lot. I mean, we saw him in that very last series in the wide receiver position, and then we saw him return two punts, I believe. I think it's one of those things where Bronco is, he's always hesitant, even if a guy is has an immense talent, he works them into the game. And I remember with Jamal Williams, the same kind of thing, where he wasn't going to start Jamal his freshman season right out the gate, but slowly but surely you could see, you know, towards the end of the season, he was getting a lot more touches and running the ball a lot more. You know, and I appreciate that, because a lot of guys are like, hey, if the most talented guy's out there, you got to let him play right away. If someone's, if they're getting used to the system and they're new to the program, I'm fine with them being worked in, especially if there's guys that are having, you know, pretty good success ahead of them. So I would like to see a little bit more of Blackman here coming up, but I'm also fine that they're slowly working him in.
That's a great point, because I was talking to a buddy at the game wondering when Blackman was going to get playing. You know, he's suited up. If you're going to suit him up and he's not suspended, play him. You know, so I was definitely one who was saying, if he's the most talented guy, get him out there. But for all the reasons you mentioned, maybe it's Bronco knows best, and we just need to trust the man.
Yeah, I mean, it's at a certain point, it's like, yeah, let's let this guy loose. Especially, you know, we're in the Houston game, we're up by a few points. Let's, you know, let's see that guy on a go route.
Yeah.
Let's let him fly. And this is another quick tangent, but I haven't seen Taysom really throw the ball downfield. I mean, we saw that one, you know, corner end zone interception that he threw. I think that was the most downfield pass, besides maybe the Jordan Leslie throw, which is kind of just like a bit of a prayer. But we haven't seen them really vertically attack. And I'm not being critical, because I don't think that there hasn't been necessity to do so.
Houston game, Davon Blackman, first play action pass. Let's do it.
All right, dialing it up. Put $500 on the prop.
Take it, Robert and I. But I will say, Robert and I will not run that play. He will run Paul Lisicki up the middle for 2 yards.
Yep, if you were a betting man, which, I mean, you have your little onions betting pool, which I will say, proud to say that I am dead last in that thing.
Yeah, but you made money this week. You are on the way up.
Yes, it's going to be the greatest comeback of all time. The fact that somehow I decided to bet $750 of fake money. Of course, we don't do real betting here in the United States.
No way.
No way, no how. But I used that on Mike Leach, and for some reason trusted him. For some reason, I don't know why. But on the way up, and I think it's going to start with me betting $500 that Paul Lisicki is going to go for a 2-yard run, very first play of the game on Houston.
Well, do it.
Awesome.
Mark it down.
All right. Well, I think that we're just about out of time here, but thank you for joining us and listening to our lovely podcast, which still remains slightly nameless, but could go with the Pessimist podcast. Maybe we'll go with that next week. We'll see. But thanks again for listening, and enjoy.